Welcome to Celebrate Poe. My name is George Bartley, and this is episode 236, A Star is Born. I apologize if you tuned in expecting another episode about Inception and Poe's DreamWorks, but I remembered that William Shakespeare was supposedly born on April the 23rd and christened on April the 26th. So I hope I can get this out in time for that date, at least for the April 26th. Well, actually, it's a little bit later than that right now. But anyway, as I understand it, the custom in England was to baptize or christen a baby 3 days after their birth. So we understandably celebrate Shakespeare's birthday 3 days before the date he was christened, a date that we do have records for. The English were really big about keeping records. By the way, when Celebrate Poe finishes looking at Shakespeare's influence on Poe, hopefully after the next episode, this podcast will return to the complex topic of the motion picture Inception and Poe's DreamWorks. Now, William Shakespeare was the son of John Shakespeare, an alderman and a successful glove maker, originally from Snitterfield in Warwickshire, and Mary Arden was his mother, and she was the daughter of an affluent landowning family. So his father married pretty well. William Shakespeare, was born in Stratford-upon-Avon, where he was baptized on 26th of April, 1564. I don't know where that December got in there. 26th of April, 1564. His date of birth is also traditionally observed on April the 23rd, St. George's Day. This date has proved especially appealing to biographers because Shakespeare died on the same date. We do know that in 1616. Of course, to say that Shakespeare influenced English and American literature, especially drama, is an understatement. So today, Celebrate Poe, we'll briefly look at some of the ways where Shakespeare influenced Poe's parents and how an examination of Shakespeare's works on the marriage of David and Eliza Poe indirectly affected their marriage. I did a spreadsheet to support my claims about David and Eliza in what might be one of the nerdiest things you've ever heard. Now, in the next episode of Celebrate Poe, I want to look at some of the ways that Shakespeare influenced Poe himself. I was into Poe for years before I began to appreciate the nature of the productions in which Poe's parents acted. David and Eliza Poe, like most of the actors during early American theater, were members of a repertory company. In other words, the Poes were engaged in what has to be one of the hardest forms of acting. You see, acting in a repertory company is not like learning a role and playing just that one part while you keep it fresh in your mind. A repertory company, such as the one that David and Eliza acted in, required the actors to have hundreds of roles ready to perform at any time. Today, a Broadway actor might learn a role and perform every night for months, sometimes memorizing hundreds of lines and spending hundreds of performances fine-tuning those lines. But the Poes did not have that luxury. They were often expected to learn a great deal of, let's say, Shakespeare, the most in-demand form of drama in the United States during the 19th century. So, for the most part, you would have David Poe learning the smaller parts, because that was all he was really capable of. Sometimes he was so drunk that he had trouble standing on stage. Eliza Poe, on the other hand, was the ingenue. Instead of a silent footman, she would play a leading role like Juliet, a role that certainly required a great deal more work, but also made her the 19th century equivalent of a traveling theater star. But first, I'd like to take a minute to look at some of the unique theatrical attitudes regarding performing Shakespeare in the 19th century. When it came to drama, William Shakespeare was king. Theaters and theatrical scenery became even more elaborate in the 19th century, and the acting additions used were progressively cut and restructured to emphasize more and more the soliloquies and the stars at the expense of pace and action. So some of them might drag out. Performances were further slowed by the need for frequent pauses to change the scenery, creating a perceived need for even more cuts in order to keep performance length within tolerable limits. It became a generally accepted maxim that Shakespeare's plays were too long to be performed without substantial cuts. So it's quite possible that any Shakespearean parts played by David or Eliza Poe would have been edited. The platform or apron stage on which the actors of the 19th century would come forward for audience contact. Excuse me, I'm sorry, that was the 17th century. They would come forth for audience contact was gone, and the actors stayed permanently. Now, this is the 19th century. They stayed permanently behind the fourth wall or proscenium arch, further separated from the audience by the orchestra. Throughout the 19th century, a roll call of legendary actors' names all but drown out the plays in which they appear. Sarah Siddons, 1755 to 1831. John Philip Kimball, 1757 to 1823. Henry Irving, 1838 to 1905. And finally, Ellen Terry, 1847 to 1928. So to be a star of the legitimate drama came to mean being first and foremost a great Shakespearean actor, with a famous interpretation of, for men, Hamlet, and for women, Lady Macbeth, and especially with a striking delivery of the great soliloquies. Now, the great author Hobson Quinn, who wrote what is perhaps the best biography of Poe around, has compiled a great list of the plays that David and Eliza starred in. And while many of the plays are not familiar to us today, a look at the more famous Shakespearean roles tell us a great deal about the dynamics of Poe's parents and their relationship. Now, I took a spreadsheet, and this is where it really gets nerdy, and entered the Shakespearean roles that David and Eliza played, the number of lines in each role, and compared the size and importance of each part. I know that there are no small parts, just small actors, but stick with me, and I think you'll see where I'm going with this. In my spreadsheet, I use the total number of lines that each part has in the written version of the play. Now, I know that a play such as Hamlet is over 4.5 hours long, and especially in the 19th century, most acting versions would have cut it down, possibly to even half its length, the 4.5 hours. I doubt that there's any way to know how much a director from that period cut down the play, so I'm just going to use the complete version of each part for comparison purposes. David Poe, in 6 years on the stage, played 137 parts, but many of those were parts where he just stood there. 19 were from Shakespeare. Edmund in King Lear is 79 lines. Hortensio in The Taming of the Shrew is 70 lines. Laertes in Hamlet is 62 lines. The Duke of Albany in a production of King Lear is 58 lines. Rosencrantz in Hamlet is 40 lines. Decius Brutus in Julius Caesar is 37 lines. And don't confuse this part with that of Marcus Brutus with over 700 lines. Ferdinand in The Tempest is 31 lines. Mantano in Othello is 24 lines. Bernardo in Hamlet is just 19 lines. Celino in The Merchant of Venice is 18 lines. Duncan in Macbeth is 18 lines. The Duke of Austria in King John is 16 lines. Donald Bain in Macbeth is 3 lines. And Sir Richard Vernon in Henry IV, is about the same. And Velasius in Coriolanus and Radcliffe in Richard III are all non-speaking parts. Altogether, that's an average of 27 lines per play. Now, the one part I left out was Don Pedro in Much Ado About Nothing for 139 lines. That one throws everything off and is the exception. By the way, Amazon has the great 1993 version of Much Ado About Nothing with Denzel Washington as Don Pedro. In other words, most of David Poe's roles were comparatively small. And if you're still with me, well, thank you and bless you. Now, I couldn't find a direct description, a review of David Poe Jr. on stage performing Shakespeare, but I did run across a review from 27 September 1809 where David Poe Jr. played the part of Alonzo. And it goes, quote, "By the sudden indisposition of Mr. Robertson, who was to normally have the part, the entertainments announced for the evening necessarily gave place to the proceeding. Mr. Poe was Mr. R.'s substitute in Alonzo, and a more wretched Alonzo have we never witnessed. The man was never destined for the high walks of the drama. A footman is the extent of what he ought to attempt, and if by accident, like that of this evening, he is compelled to walk without his sphere, it would beseech more sense of him to read the part than attempt to act it. His person, voice, and non-expression of countenance all combine to stamp him pooh et perinete nihai." And for those of us who don't know Latin, I had to look it up. Et perete ni means sound without substance, a voice and nothing else, or tedious talk. And I've never heard a poo used as a compliment. Now, in a footnote to this criticism, the magazine's editor offered a few words of mitigation. He said, "Here, as well as in some other passages of the theatrical register, our correspondent is too acrimonious, and I must take the liberty to differ from him, in some measure, respecting Mr. Poe's talents, who, if he would take pains, is by no means contemptible." Sounds almost like he was damning him with faint praise. Imagine if you were an actor, and a review said about your performance, "If he would try, he might not be contemptible." Now, remember, this was at a time when most journalists went out of their way to be complimentary and not overly critical. So David Poe must have been pretty bad. Eliza, on the other hand, had many roles in musicals and comedies. She was evidently an incredibly talented singer and comedian. In her 16 years on the stage, she played over 200 parts. Regarding Shakespearean roles, and let me warn you in advance, this will be over in 14 parts. She starred as Desdemona in Othello for 165 lines, Juliet in Romeo and Juliet for 118 lines, Regan in King Lear for 73 lines, Ophelia in Hamlet for 58 lines, Ariel in The Tempest for 45 lines, Nerissa in The Merchant of Venice for 36 lines, Cordelia in King Lear for 31 lines, just 7 more here, Jessica in The Merchant of Venice for 26 lines, The Prince of Wales in Richard III for 19 lines, Valeria in Coriolanus for 14 lines, Mopsa in A Winter's Tale for 13 lines, Blanche in King John for 9 lines, almost over here, the Duke of York in Richard III for 6 lines, and Prince John in Henry IV as a non-speaking part. So in comparison to David's 27 lines apart, Eliza had 44 lines for each part. In other words, with the exception of Much Ado About Nothing, her parts had almost twice as many lines. She was obviously the superior actor. Acting was in her blood, and the stage was her element since childhood. In other words, Eliza was the star. In fact, according to Wikipedia, throughout the 19th century, Romeo and Juliet had been Shakespeare's most popular play, measured by the number of professional performances. And I'm sure that Eliza Poe would have been a fantastic Juliet. I can just imagine the delicate Eliza acting on stage. O Romeo, Romeo, wherefore art thou Romeo? Deny thy father and refuse thy name, or if thou wilt not, be but sworn my love, and I'll no longer be a Capulet. 'Tis but thy name that is my enemy. Thou art thyself, though not a Montague. What's Montague? It is not. It is nor hand, nor foot, nor arm, nor face, nor any other part belonging to a man. Oh, be some other name. What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet. So Romeo would, were he not Romeo called, retain that dear perfection which he owes without that title. Romeo, doff thy name, and for that name, which is no part of thee, take all myself. And there's a great soliloquy in Othello, Act 4, Scene 2, that Eliza Poe, as Desdemona, would have delivered. And this will be the final example of one of Eliza Poe's soliloquies. In this soliloquy, Desdemona expresses her unwavering love for Othello, even in the face of his harsh accusations. Despite the hurtful words he has spoken, she remains devoted to him. The monologue reveals her innocence and virtue, emphasizing her tragic fate in the play. Alas, Iago, what shall I do to win my lord again? Good friend, go to him, for by this light of heaven I know not how I lost him. Here I kneel, if e'er my will did transpass against his love, either in discourse of thought or actual deed, or that mine eyes, mine ears, or any sense delighted them in any other form, or that I do not yet, and ever did, and ever will, though he do shake me off to beggarly divorcement, love him dearly. Comfort, forswear me. Unkindness may do much, and his unkindness may defeat my life, but never taint my love. I cannot say whore. It does not abhor me, now I speak the word, to do the act that might the addition earn. Not the world's mass of vanity could make me. Now, one way of looking at an actor's talent is to look at other actors who have played the same part. In other words, is this a juicy role where the actor makes a big impression? Well, Eliza played some incredibly showy parts, roles that were later played by some of the greatest or most popular actresses of all time. For example, in 1964, Dame Maggie Smith of Downton Abbey played Desdemona opposite St. Laurence Olivier in Othello. Maggie Smith had earlier won a Tony for the Broadway version. In 1996, Claire Danes played Juliet opposite Leonardo DiCaprio in Romeo and Juliet. In 1983, the late, great Dame Diana Rigg of The Avengers and later Game of Thrones played Regan in King Lear with Sir Laurence Olivier. Several years later, Daisy Ridley of the Star Wars franchise played a version of Ophelia from Hamlet in a movie called Ophelia. And in 1996, Kate Winslet from Titanic played Ophelia in a star-studded four-and-a-half-hour version of Hamlet. These are all definitely showy roles that require an extremely talented actress, and Eliza Poe played all these parts. About the only showy part that David Poe Jr. played was Don Pedro, a part that was played by Kenner Reeves in the 1993 version of Much Ado About Nothing. And to be honest, I looked through several versions of Much Ado About Nothing, and while Much Ado does have some really showy soliloquies, in my opinion, Don Pedro just has basic lines that don't really say much. In my opinion, Don Pedro comes across as a character who doesn't have that much going for him and is, well, rather boring. I have a good friend who has played Don Pedro, and I hope he's not listening, because you know how actors, you know, tend to identify with their parts. After all is said and done, you might deduce that the situation sounds like something from a 19th century A Star Is Born. The wife is extremely talented and well-received, while the self-destructive husband becomes less and less popular. The dynamics between accomplished wife and unhappy husband could not have been easy for David to handle. They were in the same profession, but she was easily twice as talented and successful. Most husbands, especially in the early 1800s, would just not be able to deal with the situation. In fact, David Poe was to later desert the family. And despite her occasional popularity, Eliza Poe was barely earning enough to get by. The next episode in this podcast will deal with a look at how Shakespeare influenced Edgar Allan Poe, the writer, as well as an examination of some Shakespearean lines from Shakespeare's notes. When I first saw those lines in Poe's original document, my inner reaction was probably like that of a teenage girl at a Taylor Swift concert, except that I didn't make any noise or pull out a cell phone. Well, sources for this episode include Edgar Allan Poe, A Critical Biography by author Hobson Quinn, The Poe Log, A Documentary Life of Edgar Allan Poe by Dwight R. Thomas and David K. Jackson, Edgar Allan Poe, The Man by Mary E. Phillips, Edgar Allan Poe by George E. Woodberry from the American Men of Letters series, and The Life of Edgar Allan Poe by Eugene L. Didier. Oh, and don't let me forget Romeo and Juliet and Othello by, well, guess who? Okay. I encourage you, though, to ask questions from the character of Mr. Poe, which we've had in some past episodes, and of course we'll have a great deal more in the future. Or ask questions just of me, George Bartley, at celebratepoe@gmail.com. That's celebratepoe, CelebratePoe @gmail.com. There's no need to include your name unless you specifically say you want a shout out. I do have quite a few questions from my days at History Alive as Poe, but I want to deal with the subjects that you are most interested in. Again, that's celebratepoe@gmail.com. And please subscribe to this podcast so that you won't miss any episodes of Celebrate Poe. Well, thank you for making it this far as we take a deep dive into the life, times, and influences of America's Shakespeare and how he has influenced our world. Now, I'd like to end with an excerpt from a version of Nobody Coming to Marry Me. I arranged this using GarageBand, and this music was Eliza Poe's big hit on stage.